Let's go. Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Ben Swanson, your host here, along with Andrew Mason, our guest for the first week of free agency. We're beginning to wrap up here on Thursday. Obviously, a huge flourish of moves on that first day, even before 2 p.m. hit. Trade reports, things that I expect more out of the NBA and baseball and hockey, and now football is getting in on the fun. That was a really wild begin to Tuesday there.
I'd love to see more trades. I enjoyed the frenzy that was over, not simply guys signing elsewhere, but over the week that led up to it, the McCoy for Alonzo trade, and then the Bradford Foles trade right around 2 p.m., and then Jimmy Graham going to the Seahawks and Max Unger going back to the Saints. You know, it's a lot of these trades, I think I would say all three trades have the potential to have each side happy with what it got. And ultimately, you know, people talk about, oh, one team wins the trade, one team loses the trade. If it's the best kind of trade, they both win. They both get better. That's what both the teams are hoping for. With draft picks involved, it takes some time, usually to gauge the result of the trade. I mean, just you look back at recent Broncos history. In 2011, and this is kind of a trade that goes under the radar, at midseason they trade Brandon Lloyd. Now, when they traded Brandon Lloyd, it was right after Tim Tebow ascended to the starting quarterback position for that year, and it was apparent that just wasn't going to fly with Lloyd, who's a very talented receiver, but also a very mercurial personality, to say the least. So they got a fifth-round pick for Brandon Lloyd from the St. Louis Rams. You didn't really think much of the pick. You know, maybe it'll be something, maybe not. That pick became Malik Jackson. So, you know, that's the positive side, and certainly, you know, Lloyd only played the rest of that, you know, only played the rest of that season for the Rams before moving on. So, you know, you would have looked at that trade even in 2012, early in 2013, you would have kind of shrugged your shoulders. But the way Malik has emerged in the last year and a half, you'd say, okay, well, the Broncos probably won that deal. Of course, then you look back at the trades that both sides lost or once or the Broncos lost. There's one that we've referenced on the site in the last couple of weeks with Chris Myers being released by Houston, and it caused me to recall when the Broncos traded Chris Myers to Houston and got back a sixth-round pick that was Spencer Larson, who, you know, was serviceable as a fullback, goes down in Bronco history as the, you know, most recent guy to start both on both offense and defense in the same game, a very rare feat, something, you know, basically you see about less than once a generation, more like once every few decades. But, you know, Myers goes to Houston and ends up going to two Pro Bowls. So, you know, it took some time. You know, these trades, they take some time to bear themselves out. And what's interesting about some of these trades, not so much the Alonzo McCoy trade, obviously, but the Foles and Bradford trade is, you know, you have a second-rounder involved with that, Philadelphia, you know, sending a second-rounder to St. Louis to get Sam Bradford. And then also you've got a first-round pick involved in the Unger, Jimmy Graham trade. So, and that may well be what swings the deal in the Saints' favor, because that pick is number 31 in the first round, and that's right where you want to start taking tight ends. And I think New Orleans might find its replacement for Jimmy Graham right away.
Interesting. And as for signings, those obviously happened in a flurry as well. For the Broncos, they announced that they re-signed Virgil Green, and they went with tight end again shortly after that when they signed Owen Daniels, who was formerly with Gary Kubiak, Rick Dennison, Brian Perriani, all in Baltimore on the Ravens for last season after he bounced back from a leg injury to finish off his career in Houston with a bunch of those same guys. In fact, as has been the popular fact this week, is that Daniels has not played a single snap, not under the tutelage of Gary Kubiak.
Consistency. Certainly no one knows the Kubiak offense among active players You'd say no one knows it better than Owen Daniels at this point. And that's where I think he's crucial to where this offense is going to go. Not only because he's so familiar with it, but he's going to be a bridge, I think, between what Kubiak is going to incorporate into the offense and the type of nomenclature he's going to put into the playbook that he's designing and what the Broncos have used and what Peyton Manning has used over recent years. Daniels will be going to Duke University to take part in the informal workouts with Peyton Manning that he's held at the Duke football facilities the last few years. You know, there's other targets will be going. You know, looks like Cody Latimer might be in the mix out there. I'm sure you'll see Emmanuel Sanders there. You may see Virgil Green there. But but that's, I think, where Daniels and Manning are really going to help each other get on the same page. I think that, they'll get their timing. They'll start getting their timing right. And then when they get the playbook, or I should say the playbook iPads, back in their hands next month with the new language and what they're going to be doing going forward. And I think Owen Daniels is really going to be someone that Peyton ends up relying upon to ease that transition and kind of get everyone up to speed. So it's a key signing on multiple fronts, not just to try and replace Julius Thomas now off to Jacksonville on a deal that includes $24 million guaranteed, but also for what he's going to do to kind of bridge the gap and provide the connective tissue between what Kubiak's going to bring to the offense and what's going to be held over from the offense that Peyton Manning has run on the field the last 3 years.
What he can also help with is Virgil Green. Obviously, Virgil was a guy the Broncos drafted, one of the first picks that Elway made that has re-signed a deal off his rookie contract. And Virgil is going to be transitioning into a new offense that he's not going to be as familiar with. I mean, he had to do that coming out of college, and with the lockout happening, he had to make a very quick adjustment after it finished, and he could transition into the last offense that was here. But being able to have a mentor, someone he's already studied a lot of tape on in Daniels, is going to be a big help for him as the Broncos look for him to have a bigger role, not only blocking, which he's been exceptional at, but in the passing offense.
Right, and the other thing to consider, it's not something that is necessarily positive, but with Owen Daniels, you are talking about a guy going into his 10th year, and he did have the leg injury back in 2013. So you want to make sure you've got a quality guy who can take the lion's share of the snaps in case an injury pops up for Daniels. And that's and Green's going to be a good fit there. Now, he has all the athletic tools to be a good pass-catching tight end as well as a good blocker. It just hasn't really happened for him yet. I think part of that is simply due to the fact that they've had some guys in front of him on the depth chart, and he hasn't had many opportunities. But I think if he gets more chances starting in practice when the Broncos get back out here for OTAs this spring, I think that can get Virgil Green up to a higher level. And to be honest with you, I look back at the 2012 offense, and the tight ends were Joel Dreesen and Jacob Tammy with a little dash of Virgil Green thrown in. Julius Thomas was inactive all year. And that offense was pretty efficient, and they got good production out of the tight ends by going by committee with Tammy and Dreesen and the two of them lining up together quite a bit. I think you could see the same kind of production and effectiveness from Owen Daniels and Virgil Green working together as you saw back in 2012.
One of the things he talked about at his press conference was that when he's in there, he doesn't want teams to think, okay, Virgil Green's in there, they're going to run the ball, which is
what people thought. Yeah. Let's face it, that's what opponents thought the last few years. And if Julius was out there, they're going to throw.
Yeah, and if he transitions from being a single-faceted, blocking tight end, it's someone who can do a little bit more, someone who's going to get those chances in the passing game, then he could really lend a big hand to that offense, especially in an offense that really relies on tight ends.
And the other thing, because Virgil has the blocking, which even though you want to do more in the passing game, you're going to lean on that. If the Broncos stand pat at right tackle with what they have, that means you're probably looking at Michael Schofield third-round pick from last year being on the first team. Certainly, that's the way the winds seem to be blowing at this point, the way John Elway and Gary Kubiak have talked about Michael Schofield in recent weeks, who didn't see a snap during the regular season. And he can be a very good fit in a zone-blocking system. The Ravens liked him a lot last year. Gary Kubiak pointed that out at the scouting combine. They were really impressed with him, really taken with him when they scouted the offensive lineman last year. But if he's out there, that's still going to be a guy who's potentially making his debut this year. So you might want to have Virgil Green lined up outside of him quite a bit to kind of ease the transition. If Schofield's out there at right tackle, and you got Virgil Green on one side, and then Lou Vasquez, who was an All-Pro at right guard in 2013, to the other side, that's really going to help. That's really going to help the transition, I think, having two quality blockers like that, and I think that'll get Schofield up to speed pretty fast.
And on the third day here, the Broncos look to make some moves on defense. They signed defensive end in a 3-4, Vance Walker out of Kansas City. He was released on March 6th after he had a three-year deal with them the previous offseason. Before that, he was with the Rams, I want to say?
Raiders, and then before
Raiders
that, the Falcons.
Falcons. Yeah,
Falcons drafted him out of Georgia Tech in 2009, so the 2014 season was the first one that Vance Walker spent in a 3-4 alignment. He was mostly a rotational guy, although he did play quite a bit in December against the Cardinals and the Raiders. And going back and watching the film of that, pretty effective. And what I liked about him was the ability to move around quite a bit. You saw him, as a 3 technique. You saw him as a 5 technique. There was even one play I was looking at where the Raiders went with a jumbo package, and they had two tight ends flanked to one side, and Walker was a 7 technique out between the tackle and the tight end. Also noticed how often he was getting double teamed, which showed how seriously teams were taking him, and knowing that if they only put one man on him, that he was going to be able to get some disruption, especially in the run defense area of the game. So I think he's a good fit. I mean, the Broncos have identified Derek Wolfe and Malik Jackson as the guys who are going to be, the first teamers at the two defensive ends this year. But you need a rotation. You need a guy who's going to be able to come in and play, 25-30%, maybe even more of the snaps. A guy who can maybe relieve both Wolfe and Jackson from time to time, make things easier on them. I think Walker's a really good fit for that, and very, very bright guy, and also seems like he's really eager to get to work and eager for the classroom part of it. He was talking about how he had a 2-hour conversation with Bill Kolar, the defensive line coach, today, and certainly that's a good sign because Kolar loves those guys who are kind of old school students of the game. I think, if he can handle some demanding coaching. And Kolar is an outstanding coach, but he does expect the best, and he doesn't suffer fools, both in the meeting rooms and on the field. And I think Walker will make him pretty happy, and I think Walker will rise to the occasion under Kolar.
And one of the bigger free agents from the Broncos on the defensive line side was, of course, Terrence Knighton. Terrence was looking to come off a year in which he helped the Broncos become one of the best, if not the best, which, if you go by per play yards, I think they were number one, maybe number two. And so he was looking to see a little bit more action on the market than he got. And he ended up going to Washington on a one-year deal. He
1 year, $4 million. And I think this is just a case of a guy who misread the market for his services. He was highly effective for the Broncos the last 2 years, and go back to the 2013 AFC Championship. He was probably the defensive MVP of that game. I think played the game of his life that day. But, he played 48% of the snaps last year, so you don't want to overpay for a guy who isn't going to play more than half the snaps. B, he'd had weight issues to the point where he'd been fined for not being at the weight the team wanted him at, and when you're talking about a guy who's carrying sometimes 370 pounds, that leads to another concern, which is down the line, is his body going to hold up with that weight? What is that going to do to his joints? Is he going to have knee problems, ankle problems, you know, things of that nature going forward? And that, I think, depressed the market for him to where, you know, it was below what he was expecting. I mean, you have to, certainly he has to be disappointed at the fact that he only got a one-year deal and he's going to have to prove himself again, even though, you know, $4 million as a salary is more than he earned each of the last 2 years for the Broncos.
And I don't want to say the writing was on the wall, but in a defensive scheme like the Broncos 3-4 under that they'll be switching to, the nose tackle that you want in there isn't necessarily one who's going to clog the middle and try and keep offensive linemen from getting to the second level.
Well, Wade Phillips has had guys like that. He's adapted his scheme. I mean, he's had some big guys. He's had some, you know, smaller guys around. Well, I'd say small, relatively speaking, around 320 pounds. But because he's done both, that reduces the pressure to overpay. Now, the way it stands for the Broncos, they've chewed up a good chunk of their. Of their salary cap room with the Daniels and the Green and the Walker signings. They have to account for the fact that their rookie pool number is probably going to be right in the neighborhood of $6 million, assuming they get the four compensatory picks that John Elway expects they will get, which will take their draft complement up to 10 players. And so you're budgeting for that both in terms of the cap and also in terms of what you're projecting your 53-man roster to be, because certainly if you're going to have 10 picks, your hopes are that 8, 9, preferably all 10, manage to make the 53, that they're good enough to be there. So, you know, that's kind of governing their planning as well, those factors. So, you know, I think I don't think they're really going to actively look for a nose tackle. They may forage and see what's out there in the next week or two or even beyond. But it wouldn't surprise me if they say, okay, we're going to prioritize nose tackle as a position we look for in the draft, and then maybe try to find that guy. But it may not be just another gap clogger. It may be someone comparable to Sylvester Williams or Marvin Austin in terms of a size, quickness blend in the middle.
And then the bigger free agents that the Broncos had hitting the market have also made some of their moves. Orlando Franklin was the first one I saw to San Diego. Julius Thomas going to Jacksonville with the Jaguars.
$9.2 million a year for a tight end. Wow. I mean, I'm not going to fault Julius for that deal. The one thing you'll never hear from me is me criticizing a guy for taking the money.
Right. Because no one should ever do that.
No. I mean, that's what would you do? You know, listener, dear listener out there, what would you do if are you going to take the better offer financially, the one that sets you up for life? And really, you look at Julius Thomas. I mean, he has that deal. It's got $24 million guaranteed, and it's in Florida, a state with no personal income tax. So, you know, it's financially a very prudent deal, and I'm not going to criticize him for it. But boy, you sit there and you look at the money being thrown around this week, and yes, the salary cap continues to rise, and teams had a fair amount of carryover. And as John Elway noted on Wednesday, this is a product of the CBA of 2011. This is what it was designed to achieve. A key tenet of the 2011 CBA was that it basically put rookies into a slotting system. So, you know, the number one pick is going to get this amount.
A rookie scale.
Number two, rookie scale. System. Number two, number three, and so on. So that brought down the salaries. You weren't giving these contracts with 30-plus million guaranteed like Sam Bradford got at the top of the 2010 draft when the St. Louis Rams picked him. So, the goal, you know, you reduced that, but the goal was that money was going to be made on the backside by the veterans who had earned it rather than the draft picks who had to prove it. So that part of it worked, but this being the year where all the 2011 draft picks except the first rounders who received the fifth year option, like Von Miller did, mm-hmm. You know, they were all hitting the market, and this is where they were making their money. But it certainly exploded in a way that, I don't think it caught people off guard. It caught teams off guard. I think it caught observers of the league a little bit off guard as to the magnitude. And the other thing that is endemic for the that is related to the Broncos is that they're arguably their biggest signing of the 2015 offseason actually happened in December of 2014 when Chris Harris got done, and they got him for $8.5 million a year. And with the money that was thrown around to guys like Byron Maxwell from Seattle, who moved on to Philadelphia, Maxwell is not in Chris Harris's class. We saw how the Broncos picked on Byron Maxwell back in week 3, and he's making more than Chris Harris, and I think it's clear not only from that game but just from the general body of work that he's not the player that Chris Harris is. So the Broncos, it was a good deal for the Broncos. It was also a good deal for Chris Harris because he was coming off a torn ACL, and he was able to get guaranteed money and the assurance that even if something happened to him, he was going to have his nest egg. So it was mutually beneficial. But at the same time, Chris Harris did make it through the year, and he was still healthy. He did go to the Pro Bowl, and when you look at what was paid for other guys, you think, wow, the Broncos got a steal.
And plus, they kept their franchise tag, Demaryius Thomas, their franchise leader in season receiving yards, single game receiving yards.
And Von Miller got his fifth year option, which took him up over $9 million for this year in terms of salary and cap charge. So, and he's certainly going to be on the books for more next year, one way or another. You'd think whether they can get a long term deal done with Von Miller or he ends up being franchised. That's going to be a significant expenditure. So, the Broncos, it may seem like they were quiet, but, they did have some smaller moves, but you have to, look at the outlay for Demaryius Thomas, for the increased outlay for Von Miller, and then keeping Chris Harris around. And really that was, Harris doesn't count, it doesn't have a big cap charge this year. It's a little under $4 million. But that's going to increase over the next few years, and of course you have with Miller and Thomas counting a combined $22 million under the cap. You can see the Broncos made plenty of investments in this off season, even though it didn't come associated with the quote unquote splash that you saw from other teams.
Some of those splashes were, as we mentioned, Orlando Franklin to the Chargers, Raheem Moore on Thursday signed with the Texans. And then you had, Thomas, obviously, as we said, with Jacksonville. Which do you like the most
of those moves?
Yes,
I think Raheem Moore is going to provide the most bang for the buck, given that it's a 3-year, $12 million deal, according to reports. I don't think that's an overpay. I think he's going to prove worthy of that contract. The problem with Julius Thomas's deal is there's a big question over how much his success was tied to A, having Peyton Manning as the trigger man here in Denver, and B, having other targets to take pressure off of him. When Julius Thomas is, when he's running down the seam, you've got Demaryius Thomas. In 2013, you had Eric Decker. In 2014, Emmanuel Sanders on the outside, and when Wes Welker was still a double-digit touchdown guy. In 2013, he's running the underneath routes, and all of that is clearing space for Julius Thomas, and he's able to get open, or when he is covered, have basically a physical mismatch. And of course, Peyton Manning, very accurate quarterback, knows how to get into the right spot. Now Julius is going to Jacksonville. Blake Bortles, jury's still out on him and his development as a quarterback. I think he can be good, but not a lot around him. Where are the targets that are going to draw that coverage away from him? And Julius Thomas is going to have to get used to being if not the focal point, of a defense's coverage strategy. And I don't know how he's going to fare in that. It's a little bit analogous to Eric Decker going to the Jets last year. Didn't have the quarterback. didn't have the targets that could take pressure off him in the way that his Broncos teammates could, and his numbers reflected that, and there was a drop in performance. I think Decker will probably do better next year because he has Brandon Marshall lined up on the other side of the field from him. That's going to draw some attention. But unless the Jaguars have something up their sleeve, I don't see anyone coming to rescue them, and I don't see any kind of upgrade in targets, you know, coming forward. So, you know, Julius is going to be the guy that defenses focus on, and there's a long history in NFL free agency of guys who were the number two or number three target with a team going somewhere else, asked to be the number one target and struggling.
And then with Orlando, I mean, an in-division rival, that'll be real interesting. You know, he's going to want to get some payback, I'm sure, twice a year, if not more in the playoffs.
Isn't $7.3 million a year enough payback?
I suppose. It would be for me.
I think I would be like, okay, I'm not That's bitter. Good. I say thank you for the opportunity, and let's move on. San Diego's a lovely city, and go from there. But, you know, being with Mike McCoy is going to help him. That'll ease the transition. He's comfortable with Mike McCoy. McCoy's comfortable with him. Another quarterback that gets the ball out fast. Certainly, Philip Rivers has been cured of his tendency to hold the football for a little bit too long and take the pounding. A lot of that is, again, Mike McCoy and the system that they run. And
you're definitely going to be happy to have not only a healthy guy, but a very talented offensive lineman to help protect him and get the run game going there.
They've done a good job the last 2 years of turning something that was a massive weakness into a strength. Some of it has been through, through drafting, but also, you know, making wise moves. I mean, certainly, you know, not a lot was thought of King Dunlap when the Chargers brought him in, but he's, you know, he's really improved and has established himself as a sturdy guy on the outside. So, Franklin, I think Franklin will do well. That being said, when you look at that contract. And yes, I know what the market is this year, and we know what prices are. But if you're the Broncos, you know, and you were looking at trying to keep Orlando Franklin, could you really have rationalized paying him $1.55 million a year more than Lou Vasquez, who was an All-Pro at the other guard spot just a year earlier? That's, you know, and sometimes with these situations, you've got to kind of balance. You not only have to balance your cap, but you also have to balance kind of, you know, egos almost. Say you want to pay for what's proven, and the other thing to consider, you know, we talked about earlier about the contracts that, you know, the Broncos did get done but are looming for next year. Von Miller, Demaryius Thomas franchise, they'd like to get him to a long-term deal. You know, Malik Jackson, his contract's expiring. I know they like him a lot. You know, Brandon Marshall's a guy that they're also very high on. You know, the Broncos have some have cap space, but you can see with guys like that, it's going to go pretty fast. So you have to get ready and start the process of drafting and developing your own, and that leads the Broncos to where they feel like they've got some good internal options, especially going to a more zone blocking based scheme than they had in the past. And you know, they're certainly showing confidence in some of their young offensive linemen by being willing to let a guy like Orlando Franklin go.
One more offensive lineman we forgot to talk about, and that's Jodon.
Tight end.
Oh, he's a tight end?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was a lineman.
Jodon Duncan had 35 bench press reps at the combine last year, where that was better than all but seven offensive linemen.
There we go.
He has offensive linemen strength. Upper body strength, but he isn't an offensive lineman. But yes, Jodon Duncan,
out of Dixie State.
Dixie State in Utah signed to a contract this week. One of two way under the radar guys that the Broncos brought in, but certainly intrigued by him physically.
Well, he did well for Dixie State. He was a quote little All-American, which is, I guess, some kind of designation I didn't realize existed. But for Division II and III collegiate players, you can be a little All-American.
Little All-American,
but don't feel diminutive.
No. Well, and even though instead of going up against, you know, against 240, 245-pound linebackers and covers, you're going up against guys that are 215, 220. So,
yeah, a little bit of a drop-off.
Yeah, it'll be an adjustment for him, but certainly...
It's been an adjustment for me. I've been confusing his name with Jodon Baker. A very tenured and distinguished actor.
Classic character actor, and as some would say, a very prototypical that guy.
Mm-hmm. If you watch Fletch, you've noticed him.
Chief Carlin.
You might not know his name, but you can see him in that. Or if you watch Mystery Science Theater 3000, he is a... He's a little bit of a punching bag for them. He's gone.
I was
going to
use the phrase for the word pinata. Yes.
Yes. He's been. I think he's gone on the record and said he hates them. So he's obviously a little bit more, tender after they lampooned his movies, than they feel about him. They think he's a fine actor. They just really thought those movies were ripe.
You can be a lousy or great actor in lousy movies. I mean,
that's how they get their starts.
Is that any different than Ernie Banks, you know, the late great Ernie Banks, playing for, you know, terrible Cubs teams all those years?
Right.
You know, what was the quote that that Annie Savoy said in Bull Durham? Full many a flower is destined to bloom and waste its sweetness on the desert air, or something like that.
Something along those lines. Yeah. I mean, you can find it in sports very easily. In movies, you don't watch those movies. unless you're like me and you like watching really awful movies. But
I mean, Al Pacino made Simone. Mm-hmm. You know? Or Sim 1, or however you pronounced it. You know, Ben Affleck end up you know, winning. Has won 2 Academy Awards, and he's exactly. I mean, this is the guy who did Reindeer Games and Gigli and Jersey Girl.
Did you do Gigli?
Yeah,
that was
Gigli.
The one that
it was a jig. Yeah, Gigli, right? That's how it's
like
pronounced.
That. I think it was from
whatever it was awful.
French for
it was French for crap.
La merde. Oh, I guess if you're French and listening to this, that was. NSFW podcast now for all our French listeners out there.
I'm sure we've got many.
Sure, it's
of
a huge
our bilingual audience in Canada.
Yes,
I'm sure may take offense.
That one goes out to everyone out in Quebec.
But yeah, Jodon Duncan, where were we?
very yeah. Strong upper body.
Very productive. 13 touchdowns as a senior at Dixie State.
On the NFL's draft site, I think they said before games he listens to. I can't remember. Elton John.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's the.
I haven't really listened to Elton John when I want to get pumped up though.
Well, there was a. If it's a Saturday game, you know, Saturday night's all right for fighting. Get a little action in. You know, there's some thumping tunes in Elton's catalog, but
yeah.
You know, if he's but at the same time, if it's
60
your
years
song
on.
Or Daniel or 60 years on or
I liked listening to that one. That one was I had this live Elton John cassette.
Is it the one where he was in Australia?
I don't know.
The last concert before he had surgery and his vocal register changed.
It's called 171170.
Okay, that wasn't it.
Because
I've heard the
old.
60 Years On version from the concert he did with the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra. That was, you know, that was the one where the second version of Candle in the Wind, not the one that was redone for Princess Diana when she was killed in 1997, but the one that came out in, I believe it was 1987. Because there was the original in the 70s, and there was the... I think it went top 10 in 87, was the Candle in the Wind off the concert in Melbourne. I know way too much about Elton John.
Elton John's great.
I took 1 year for Mother's Day, I took my mom's a big Elton John fan. I took her to go see him in concert. She was absolutely thrilled. It's one of the best, maybe the best Mother's Day gift I've ever given.
That's a pretty good one. If you must see one piano man, you should see him rather than Billy Joel.
Yes, I'm not going to disagree with that.
Yeah.
And also, Elton John, has very strong sports connection. He is the chairman for life of Watford FC in England. Mm-hmm. He is, Broncos fans will want to hear this. He is a big Patriots fan because he's a close friend of Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots.
I wonder how that connection happened.
I don't know.
He's a team captain. I just looked this up.
Yeah.
Patriots name a new team captain, Elton John.
He's a diehard Atlanta Braves fan, to the point where when Bobby Cox and Chipper Jones retired, he was part of the crew offering tributes to them. I know one of his American homes is in Atlanta. That's the connection.
Okay.
There.
Well, he also... Did he ever do something for, like, the Super Bowl? Did he never do something for them?
He did a season kickoff concert once when it was in New England.
That's right.
It's funny because he's never done a Super Bowl, and I think he's kind of... For a while, when the NFL was using, old school acts back in the 2000s, when you were going through the Stones, mm-hmm. and the Who, he was kind of the big fish that they were trying to land for a while and didn't ever get him.
He was in a Pepsi commercial during the Super Bowl. I remember that.
Yes, that's right.
So that's the same thing, practically. You might get paid a little bit more.
I want to talk to this guy and actually find out what Elton John songs he listens to. I mean, this is fascinating. This is, this is heavy research. It's still not the most unusual musical choice.
No.
There's a player, and he asked me to keep him nameless. He hasn't played here in a long time, and I will continue to do that. He said to me that he listened to Celine Dion.
Oh,
before games.
That is a little bit embarrassing.
But I'm not gonna. Yeah, but many years on, I've kept my promise not to reveal his name publicly, and I will continue to do so. Yeah.
Now the only song I really know of hers is My Heart Will Go On. I don't know if she has any. She might have some real awesome slappers in there.
Well, she has the one that she did with the esteemed operatic producer Jim Steinman, the guy who worked with Meatloaf.
Mm-hmm.
It's all coming back to me now. I think it had a music video where there was a motorcycle wreck and stuff like that. It's like 22 years
Sounds exciting.
Ago. Yeah. Aside from that...
Maybe she's ventured out.
You don't really think of her as, with the kind of music that really gets your heart thumping, unless it calls to mind a past love or something like that, but that's not really gonna get you up for
maybe,
a football game.
Maybe she has a Bob Dylan goes electric moment, and she crossed over into some rock and roll or some rap or something. That would be. I'm sure she's done it.
It's possible. Didn't Pat Boone record an album of heavy metal standards?
I don't back know about
in
that.
Back in the 90s, I think yes, Pat Boone in a metal mood.
I'm sure you've got to keep up with the kids, You know how artists always get like, oh, I don't want to play this song. Like, I'm so sick of people wanting me to play this song. How do you do that? How do you escape that? You cross over. You start making some music that you just break in new territory.
And some, even though it may be a song, an old song, but it's a different genre.
Could be.
I think... Actually, with Pat Boone and the metal, he had a cover of Crazy Train that was the theme for the Osbournes.
Yeah.
That's what they used.
Interesting.
I'm not saying it was quality, but I've listened to some garbage in my time. I've listened to the Ethel Merman disco album.
I have never listened to any garbage in my life.
Not even Stupid Girl?
Stupid Girl. I don't know what that
garbage.
Is. Garbage. Oh, Garbage the band.
I was, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Play on words.
There. I obviously, I don't listen to them that much. Anyway, we'll have to talk to Jodon Duncan a little bit later on.
I think he needs to be a guest on this podcast if he's an Elton John fan. I think we if he's willing to play that up, I think we need to discuss
all things
football,
Elton. And then you talk a little Elton John. Just a natural football conversation.
Well, maybe, you know, maybe we can all do the podcast wearing wigs. We'll get Scott,
I've got a
social media
mustache.
Savant to take a picture of us.
I've got a fake mustache in there. I can branch out to a wig. Anyway, I'm sure we'll be seeing some more moves come our way other than Jodon Duncan. Obviously, there's a lot more Broncos free agents who are yet to make their moves, yet to make decisions. Bigger names, smaller names.
Right, and as we were recording this, Nate Irving was scheduled to visit with the Arizona Cardinals. And really, with Irving and the linebackers, at this point, probably no room at the inn. The Broncos, you know, re-signed Steven Johnson to a one-year deal. You know, with the switch to a 3-4, you've got you know, Todd Davis as an inside linebacker, Steven Johnson as an inside linebacker, Lamine Barrow and Corey Nelson, the two third-day picks last year, projecting an inside linebacker. So I think Irving's going to find more opportunities elsewhere than currently exists with the Broncos, especially given their salary cap situation. So, you know, Irving came on last year before he tore his MCL, but I think he's head elsewhere, and you know, and good for him. I hope he can succeed with the opportunity.
Real quick, just because I saw this go through my Twitter feed, someone apparently told their kid, a 4-year-old child, that Nick Foles was no longer Eagle. I'm guessing he's an Eagles fan, and this is just another one in the long string of adults telling their kids that some fan is or some player is moving on, and then they record it and they put it on YouTube and kids crying and everything sad. I don't really understand the mindset of
what happens when that kid gets older and finds that video.
It's embarrassing.
Because now all this stuff, it, you know, the web is like the universe. It's constantly expanding.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's getting tired.
It just stays up there. You know, don't do that to your kid. I mean,
yeah.
So, anyway, very happy note to end the podcast. However many of these we've done,
it's quite a few, I'm sure.
Yes.
But yeah, with that, we'll wrap this one up. Next week, we'll be coming to you from the second week of free agency. Some more moves to shake out. As always, you can subscribe on iTunes, or else you can just catch it on the site in our video player. Just, you know, leave it on while you're at work or something like that, or listen to it during your lunch break. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. We'll catch y'all next week. And
see ya.